is Zappia v. Myovant Sciences Limited et al. Good morning, Mr. Hayes. You have 2 minutes reserved for rebuttal. You can begin whenever you're ready. Oh, I'm sorry. Okay.
I think 3 minutes is what I had asked.
Okay, go ahead. I had the wrong paper in front of me.
Wait. This is
24-100? Oh, I'm sorry. I skipped the Amadeo. But we'll hear you first since you're up here. People in Amadeo just grunted. I apologize. Go ahead.
Hey, good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, Joshua Fruchter of Wolin Fruchter for Appellant Joseph Zappia. I'd like to begin by focusing on what we see as a critical issue of this appeal, and that is whether, for purposes of disclosure under Section 14A of the Exchange Act, the Court should treat SCAD and Sumitomo Group relationships the same as the relationships between affiliates and in cases of the relationship between Southside law firms and affiliates in cases like Wilson and Dearborn. And we think that with Rule 8A as a pleading standard, plaintiff has adequately alleged that SCAD and Sumitomo Group relationships should be treated the same as affiliate relationships for purposes of disclosure. And that is because, as a practical matter, the record shows that the bond, the ties between Sumitomo Group members are as strong, if not stronger, than the ties between affiliates. Now, if the Court were to disagree that the record does not reflect that, we could further substantiate that equivalence in an amended complaint if given leave to replete. But based on the current record, as per the chart that appears at A-H-20, which we shared with the District Court at the hearing on the motion to dismiss, that chart shows that Sumitomo Group members regularly collaborate and coordinate on consequential business matters, such as joint ventures, financing, and public relations. And they also share a 400-year-old history that creates a family sense of unity and identity. And the lower court acknowledges that the hearing on the motion to dismiss, when I had, after discussing the chart at A-20, the court responded, so the members, they're like cousins. And later the court acknowledged that they're like family. And if the court were to browse the website of the Sumitomo Group Public Affairs Committee website, it would find that the members actually consider themselves like siblings, corporate siblings who share a common DNA. And so we have affiliates. You have parent-child. In the Sumitomo Group context, you have siblings, family relationships.
Well, let me just ask you to take a step back, and I want you to focus on materiality for a moment. You could tell me if I'm misunderstanding what the allegations are, or lack thereof. There's no allegation that Skadden or any Sumitomo Group entity it represented had a direct relationship with Sumivant or its parent. Sumitomo Group. Any direct relationship. There's no direct relationship.
So the relationship is a Keiretsu relationship. So that's the argument.
I know, but
it's what? Not a direct relationship.
The relationship is this. The two entities represented by Skadden had a minority share of less than 2% in Sumitomo Chemical, which is layers of ownership away from the entity that was the subject of the transaction, right?
Right, so
that's pretty attenuated, isn't it?
Right, so I think the court now is looking at it from the perspective of an American style corporation. You have,
yes.
100%.
Well, that's the law. I mean, that's our rules are that way. They don't take into account the affiliations, such as you've described, of Japanese corporations and family ties and all of that. We look at, don't we generally look at the corporate structure as it's laid out in a normal way, who owns what, and what the relationship is, the contractual relationship or agency relationship is with the various entities. as opposed to a much kind of broader concept that you have, which takes into account many, many other companies that are not tied to this particular transaction.
Right. So I would say, Your Honor, that I think Wilson is not just limited to affiliate relationships. The language there is any relationship that might be perceived as impairing the advocacy of the law firm. And so as a practical matter, Skadden was representing multiple Sumitomo Group entities at the same time that it was negotiating on behalf of the shareholders against other Sumitomo Group entities. So I think the court has to look at Wilson in a broad way.
Well, Wilson has dicta, you know, it may have had broad statements, but the facts are very different. The lawyer in question in that case was tied to, very, very much tied to the entities that were involved in the transaction. It was the relationships, the friendships and so forth in that small community, were different than what we're talking about here.
Yes, they were different, but in both cases you had a potential impact on the advocacy of the law firm. I mean, if Skadden has an office in Japan, they understand how Japanese business works. And so the question is, if a shareholder was made aware of these Sumitomo Group relationships, would they think that Skadden is going to jeopardize those relationships by taking a position that could be prejudicial to other Sumitomo Group members? So it's really, I think Wilson has to be read broadly. As long as there is a relationship that potentially impairs the advocacy of the law firm, shareholders want to know about that. They want to be able to judge for themselves what impact that relationship had on Skadden's advocacy, so that when they vote, they have all the information in front of them. And actually, I would say we're not actually criticizing Skadden, saying Skadden should have been disqualified, they breached fiduciary duty. We're simply saying there was a relationship here that potentially impaired their advocacy, and shareholders would want to know about that. And at page 4 of our opening brief, we suggest the language we think would be adequate. Simply disclose the relationship. You don't even have to mention the word KRS, but just simply disclose that Skadden was concurrently or in the past that represented certain entities that have close ties with the entities that are the buyers here. I will continue then. In terms of raising the issue that was just raised in terms of affiliates, I should point out we cited the Court of International Trade's opinion in Zenith, which indicated that Keiretsu produces coordinated action and the practical effects of relationship without the presence of equity connections. So the absence of equity connections here does not detract from the close ties between Sumitomo Group members. And they really are the same as affiliates, except for that one fact, the equity connections. And if we granted leave to replead, we could explain the historical reason for the lack of equity connections. There's actually a historical reason under Japanese law, but that's not in the record right now. But the point is that they do have family-like ties, just like affiliates have family-like ties.
All right. All right, thank you. You reserve your time for rebuttal.
May it please the court. Boris Feldman, the defendants below and the athletes here. First of all, thank you for advancing us in the order.
I didn't do it on purpose, but you benefited from it anyway.
It's especially an honor for me to be here today because many years ago I clerked in the district court in this building. And the number of times my judge would say to the litigants, well, if you disagree with me, go on up to 17. So I'm a little disappointed that we're on 15 instead of 17. Structurally, it's just absurd. I'm primarily interested in answering any questions that the panel will have. Judge Bianco did point out the nature of the relationship among some of the entities, and names can be a little confusing. Our client, the biotech company we acquired, was Myovant. Before the deal, Myovant was owned 52% by Sumitovant. The acquisition was by Sumitomo Pharma, which owned 100% of Sumitovant. And Sumitomo Pharma was a public company at the time. In addition, Sumitomo Pharma was owned 52% by Sumitomo Chemical, also a public company. Skadden, a great law firm, did no work before this engagement for Myovant, for Sumitovant, for Sumitomo Pharma, or for Sumitomo Chemical. None ever. Yes.
Sorry. I'm realizing I don't want to wait and then your time is too fast. But putting aside the sort of corporate relationships that we've heard about, the Carrizo and that, we do have the fact that Sumitomo Banking was teed up to finance this transaction. And we do know that Skadden was essentially contemporaneously representing Sumitomo Banking on related matters. What I'm trying to figure out is whether its status as the presumptive financer, if the Sumitomo group, the Sumitomo folks are actually going through the acquisition as the presumptive financer, gives it an interest that makes it, if not the party on the other side of the table, a party sitting next to the party on the other side of the table that's part of the transaction, that causes us to at least wonder whether a shareholder would find that information material, especially as it relates to the treatment of the possibility of soliciting bids outside of Sumitomo.
I understand your question, Your Honor. Just so that the record is clear, Sumitomo Banking, the entity you're referring to, owned a 1.41% stake in Sumitomo Chemical. And therefore, that adds, that rounds up to a 0.73%.
But the issue is not the percent ownership, it's the financing. The fact that they were going to do the financing of the transaction, why isn't that different?
It doesn't create a conflict at all.
Why?
The fact that you have a modern cross-border global law firm where some partners may do work for other banks at the same time, who may be involved in the transaction to provide funding but are not buying in it, are not going to have a material ownership interest in it. If you said that that needed to be disclosed, first of all, many of those relationships are confidential, not public. The fact that it was going to be Sumitomo Bank providing the financing was disclosed. But in terms of creating a conflict, that's not something that under any legal rules would have inhibited Skadden's performance of its advising role for the special committee. With respect to the specific question about might that not have tainted Skadden's advice to the committee about eliciting other bids? The record is very clear on that issue. First of all, in terms of eliciting other bids, that's not a lawyer thing, that's a banker thing. And there's speculation in the complaint that Skadden kept the special committee from exploring alternative transactions in order to avoid ticking off these mysterious members of the KREDS or the bank. But the proxy addressed this issue, and that's in the proxy statement. I'll get you the exact page. It's referred to both in our brief and in the order below. Quote, representatives of Goldman Sachs reported on a call they had with representatives of Company A, noting that Company A was evaluating a potential transaction with Myovant, but that Company A did not believe it likely that it could propose a transaction, given that Sumitovant and S&P, Sumitomo Pharma, had publicly stated that Sumitovant was not willing to sell its Myovant shares and would not support an alternative merger, consolidation of similar transactions with a third party involving Myovant, close quote. The proxy goes on to say on the same date, also on October 11, 2022, Company A informed representatives of Goldman Sachs that after carefully considering the opportunity for a potential transaction with Myovant and discussing the opportunity internally, Company A had determined that it would not submit a proposal for a transaction with Myovant, close quote. So Judge Robinson, the theoretical concern that SCAP might have taken a dive on its advice to the SLC about not reaching out to other parties because that could tick off their friends at the bank in Tokyo. Goldman did reach out to another party, which said, quite logically, you have a 52% owner that says it's not going to consider another bidder, so we're not making an offer. There is no plausible basis alleged in there. There's a sort of Oliver Stone story that's told about, well, maybe Scanlon didn't do a good job because they didn't want to tick off the Japanese, but there's nothing in the record to support that, much less with the pleading level required from the reform.
Can you just address, I mean, the main argument is that the Kuretsu relationship is the equivalent of a tight affiliation on, and that should be treated as such for purposes of disclosure, for purposes of materiality. What's your response to that?
There's not a special carve-out in the materiality standard for the lawyer's ethics rules that you all operated under in your practice and that we all operate on every transaction for Japanese companies that may share a newsletter to you. Judge Rakoff, he took quite seriously this, I'm tempted to call it the French connection, it's the K-Robson connection, or alternatively, it's not 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon, but 6 degrees of Sumitomo. He took very seriously the allegations about how that could advise him, and he said all we come up with is that once a quarter, they do a newsletter. If there are rules that corporate lawyers are used to about what constitutes an affiliate, what ownership percentage may should be listed as an affiliate, and none of the percentages here, which Judge Bianco talked about, which is indicated 0.73%, 0.92%, 2.25%, none of those approach a level where disclosure would be required.
Is your position that the ethics rules that you just referenced define the universe of disclosures that would be material? In other words, if there's no ethical problem with Skadden engaging in this contemporaneous representation, then that means it wouldn't be material, or are they different questions that we're asking?
There are different questions. The materiality rule is not set by an APA committee, it's set by the U.S. Supreme Court, which held in Virginia Bank shares. Fact is material only, quote, if there is a substantial likelihood that a reasonable shareholder would consider it important in deciding how to vote, close quote. Only facts, quote, important enough to assume actual significance in the deliberations of the reasonable shareholder will meet this threshold. That's TSC Industries, and in Copland, many other decisions the Second Circuit has followed those. So the ADA guidance is not the materiality test. What it goes to is the reasonableness of the proxy saying the special committee concluded that in its opinion, Seattle was independent and not conflicted. So even if my friend, and I say that sincerely, even if Mr. Fruchter believes Seattle had a conflict here, that doesn't override the committee's judgment that in its view there was no conflict, nor does it create a likelihood that the average investor faced with a 50% premium over the prior stock price would have needed to know that Seattle had done work for friends in the K-Rex. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. Mr. Fruchter, you have your rebuttal time.
Thank you, Robert. First, I just want to stress again, in terms of the standard of review here, this court has held that an alleged misstatement or omission should not be dismissed at the pleading stage unless it is so obviously unimportant. And I think any shareholder here would want to know that when SCADA was participating in the competing bid meetings, it was operating under a potential conflict. That's what we're looking for.
I had the same question Judge Robinson had, but I want to make sure you're not arguing that if a law firm represents a bank in an unrelated matter previously, that if that bank is financing a transaction and that same firm is advising a special committee, that they have to disclose that they had some prior unrelated representation of that bank? You're not arguing that. You're arguing based upon the Karatsu relationship, right?
Right, correct. If it was J.P. Morgan or Citibank, it wouldn't be an issue.
Right.
Sumitomo Bank and the relationship between Sumitomo Banking and other members of the Sumitomo Group Karatsu is not a typical lender-bar relationship. They also coordinate public relations, they engage in joint ventures, and they have family-like ties. So it's a very different situation than a traditional bank, so it would not equate to context. And yet, if necessary to replete, we could actually cite articles which would explain the role of the main bank in a KRS. Sumitomo Bank is the main bank here. We could explain more fully.
What about the argument that it couldn't have possibly mattered here because they were not entertaining bids outside of the group?
Outside?
You heard the response that here they took multiple bids. Sumitomo Bank and Pharma had publicly stated they were not willing to support some alternative merger. So there couldn't possibly have been an issue in this particular case because of that.
Right. So I think that goes subtly. The Delaware Chancery Court in Southern Peru explained that that's often a bargaining tactic by controlling shareholders. They say, yeah, we're not going to agree to another transaction. And the Delaware Chancery Court has said that it's still beneficial for the special committee to solicit competing bids to improve its bargaining position. So that wasn't done here, but shareholders should know that decision not to do it here was made in a meeting where Skadden was operating under potential conflict. So it's more a disclosure of the fact why, you know, when this decision was made, who was at that meeting? There was a law firm there that had a potential conflict. And I would note that because there was no competing bids, it was a very friendly negotiation. You had Mr. Gwinnan and Ms. Potter negotiating. They were colleagues. They sat in the Maya M Court. I know Ms. Potter would recuse herself, but essentially you had two friendlies negotiating.
Well, they did go back and forth like four times, right?
Yeah. Well,
so it wasn't that friendly.
Without a competing bidder, it was just a friendly negotiation. With a competing bidder, it would have been much more contentious.
All right. Thank you both. We'll reserve decision. Have a good day.
Thank you.